Before we get started on today's show, let me tell you about the Oxford Exxon Highway 6 West there in Oxford, the Blue Sky. Get the Stadium Cups. A lot of opportunities for that now between Swayze Field and the Pavilion at Ole Miss. You get it. You take it by the Blue Sky. 49-cent fountain drink refills to quench your thirst there at the Oxford Exxon in Oxford on Highway 6 West. Also coming to you from the Clark Ford Studio, 662-257-1900, Highway 25 South there in Amory. Give Corey a call. 15 minutes. You're going to get a quote. You're going to like that quote. You're going to end up doing a deal. And when you do that, mention the podcast. You get another $500 off there at the end with Clark Ford. Now into the show.
From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something that you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts. Chase Palm.
That broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Welcome into this Thursday edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast. Chase Palm, Neil McCready, Clark Ford Studio this morning. Couple of guests coming at you today. We're going to talk to Jeffrey Wright, as we do every single Thursday morning. We're also going to talk to Aaron Fitt, a national writer for D1Baseball.com. We talk through everything from Ole Miss to the schedule to the SEC and just a few other things that come up with Aaron during about a 20-minute interview. We'll have that later on in the show. Jeffrey, good appearance as always this morning. We talk plenty of Ole Miss basketball. We talk a little bit of Ole Miss baseball, and we talk about Ross Bjork. So that coming up with Jeffrey as well. And a packed Patterson and Earhart hotline today. Obviously, the news of the day is Ole Miss going to Auburn Arena last night, winning 60-55 over the Tigers. They've now won 12 of the last 14 against Auburn, continuing that domination that's gone for the better part of a decade now between the two schools. So Ole Miss picks up a huge quadrant one win, and Auburn suddenly, even though they have all these great metrics, in a little bit of a weird spot themselves. So Ole Miss, without Blake Henson, with TD looking pretty bad at times, then making a couple buckets late, they survive, Neil. They move to 7-4 in the SEC, 17-7 overall, and they've got a very, very winnable home game on Saturday. Talk about, you know, as much as that Florida game kind of put everything in pause mode, just kind of resetting a season last night at Auburn.
Yeah, I don't even know where to start. First, if you had the under,
cash money,
you're welcome. When two teams meet for a second time, go under if the line is high. You're welcome. And that line was really high. And if you had Ole Miss and the points, it was a really good night for you. So where to start?
By the way, before you start, because I don't want to forget this, this is the second year in a row they've beat us to it, and we screwed up and did not think about it. Jeffrey tells us at the end of the interview that he and Calkins are speaking to the sex therapist again today on Valentine's Day.
We've got to do that next year.
We keep getting beat by that because I forget it. And then I was like, what are you doing on the show today? And Jeffrey was like, oh, we're talking to that sex therapist. And I'm like, eh, it's brilliant. Freaking brilliant. And I just forgot.
It's absolute genius.
Yeah.
So, we're stupid for not doing that.
I know. And we're a podcast. We don't even have to, like, follow the FCC or whatever. We can say whatever we want.
We could say what we want to say.
Again, we don't buy air. I can say whatever I want.
I don't even know where to go buy air. I think it's in Jackson.
The air is in Jackson? That's where you buy air?
That's where you buy the air, I think.
Okay.
There's like 50,000 watts of it, or 30,000 watts of it. And so you buy air by the watt.
How many watts do we need?
I don't know. Do you buy air by the watt or by the minute?
I don't know.
Or is it a combination? Is it kind of a formula, sort of like the net?
We would need a lot of watt.
We would need a lot of watt.
Yeah.
And we use a lot of minutes.
It's fair.
It could be expensive. It could be an expensive purchase. Luckily, we have a couple of sponsors, so we could figure that out. Okay. I don't know. I'll look into air buying between now and next Valentine's Day.
All right. Sorry. Go ahead. Basketball.
All right. First of all, a shout out to Preston Broom for all the love to the podcast. Speaking about air. Okay. Got that. All right. Who's their biggest win of the season? Period.
That's true.
Period. Period. Biggest win of the season. What it says for the program, what it says for Kermit Davis, what it says for a handful of kids, what it says for total buy-in, biggest win of the season. Now, if you're an Ole Miss fan, as painful as this may be, you need to be your second favorite team the rest of the way until a scenario in which you saw them in Nashville is Auburn.
And Mississippi State.
And Mississippi State's in that mix too. But yeah. You need Auburn and Mississippi State to win games. You
desperately need Auburn to win, though. You're right. Yeah, Auburn's the one where you need those son of a guns to go on a roll.
Because you got two. Yeah, you don't need Auburn to go to Nashville and lose or something. You need Auburn to win games now. So as painful as that may be to flip that switch, you guys, if you're an Ole Miss fan, need to flip it. All right, so about Ole Miss. Listen, I'm a Bruce Pearl fan. He's a fun coach. I think he's good for the college game. I've told this story before. I was covering Alabama, and Alabama played Wisconsin Milwaukee in the first round of the NCAA tournament in Cleveland, Ohio, and it was cold as hell, and I wanted to go home. And privately, I was really hoping that Milwaukee could do it, and I didn't think that they could. It was a 5-12 game, and it was a pretty good Alabama team, very talented Alabama team, Mark Gottfried. And Bruce Pearl coached Mark Gottfried, coached him in circles. And I've kind of followed him since, and he won at Tennessee, and he's done well at Auburn, and he's very good on ESPN and all that stuff. He was so severely outcoached last night by Kermit Davis that it's mind-boggling, frankly. Not that Kermit's that good of a coach, but that he could outcoach another really good coach that way. It's one thing to outcoach Mark Gottfried. It's another thing to outcoach a really good X and O coach. And then to do it, and I don't know when they found out that they didn't have Henson. I'm going to guess sometime that day because he had what appeared to be Ole Miss stuff on at the game. When they found out that he couldn't go, you're already a thin team. Now you really don't have much margin for error, and immediately Terrence Davis gets fouls. Two fouls, and he sits, I don't know, the last 15 minutes of the first half, and you're having to play major minutes, and I'm not making fun of any of the following kids, but they're role players on this team, and frankly, they haven't played much. You're having to play Zach Naylor. I think it was, let me pull a box score up. I think it was 26 minutes. It doesn't sound right, but I'm going to find it. I should have had this up. I apologize. Zach Naylor plays significant minutes. Zach Naylor had scored 7 points this season going into the game. This season, Chase. You had to play D.C. Davis, who's been really good. I mean, D.C.'s been really good this year, but D.C.'s a former walk-on who I think played 6 minutes last year. And he's playing major minutes against one of the more talented backcourts in the SEC. And you're having to play Luis Rodriguez, who hasn't played much this season. He's had a moment or two, but, you know, he's been a freshman the whole season. So here's the box. Let's see. KJ Buffin plays 26 minutes. Zach Naylor, I was wrong, played 15. Luis Rodriguez played 15. D.C. Davis played 18, and Bruce Stevens off the bench played 23 minutes. Their bench scored 10, 12, 15 points. Terrence Davis only played 13 minutes last night. If you had told Kermit Davis before the game, Terrence Davis is going to play 13 minutes and score 8 points, and Blake Henson's not going to be able to go, I just don't know that even the most positive coach would have felt all that good about it. On the road at Auburn Arena, where to give Auburn credit, they don't lose there. They're now 12-2 in that arena, and the only other loss was to Kentucky.
I think they had lost, I mean, won 26 over the last 28, if I have that right.
Yeah, they're really good there. I mean, credit where credit goes. I mean, their fans support them well. Their students are loud. They're right on top of the court like they are at Ole Miss.
They've got to be, I mean, turning this thing around a little bit. Yeah, Ole Miss is having a really good season, but Auburn has got to be a little baffled by this domination. I mean, it's almost insane at this point because it started with Andy, it's continued with Kermit. Kermit beat up Bruce when he was at Middle Tennessee too. I mean, it's something where they cannot beat Ole Miss.
So for Ole Miss, man, it's one of those cathartic sort of wins.
Look, Ken Paul, without doing anything crazy for him at all, is got them right where we know they would be in without even a doubt. This Mavs of this morning, Ken Palm has them 21-10 and 11-7.
Oh yeah, that would be.
I mean, that would be just
pressure free.
Yeah, whatever. Go have at it. Get beat by 80. It doesn't matter in Nashville.
Listen, I wrote this in my little 10 observations. I don't know if you've looked at it. If they beat Missouri on Saturday, and they should, and then go to Columbia, South Carolina on Tuesday and win, they've got as good a shot as at the four seed in Nashville as anybody.
If you told me they have a hurdle left, and this is a lot of speculation, but I'm just kind of looking at the schedule a little bit. I think they're going to beat Missouri. They're going to beat Georgia at home, both those games. And then you got South Carolina on the road. I don't know, whatever. But it's hard to discount Ole Miss's road abilities right now. Jeffrey talks about that a lot coming up here in a little bit.
Yeah.
It's just the fact that, you know, look, they responded after they lost four in a row and five of six by winning three in a row, probably going to win at least four in a row. It's that last game in Columbia, South Carolina, that's interesting to me in case they don't get one of those other ones they're not expected to get in the middle, because they potentially have another three-game losing streak coming if they lost to Tennessee and Kentucky at home, wrapped around that road trip to Fayetteville that could go either way. But just for the sake of my conversation, they lose those three. You got to get back up one more time to really put it away against Missouri that next night.
Yeah. They're playing so well on the road that I don't think they're going to lose.
You don't think they're losing in Fayetteville and Columbia is your point? South Carolina, sorry.
I don't. I think they're going to win one of those. Okay. Hell, they might win both of those.
You think they go 2-1 on the three remaining road games?
Yeah, they're better on the road than they are at home.
Yeah.
They are. I mean, I've watched them play. They play with a different edge on the road than they do at home. I'm not saying they're a bad home team. I'm not. I'm not saying that, God, because I'm sure it'll get twisted, because everything that can possibly be twisted now gets twisted, almost to the point of it being amusing. But they play a more focused, hard-edged, tough-nosed game on the road than they do at home. And I don't know that South Carolina, now look, they're okay. But they're hitting that point in the season where their kids keep up with stuff on the media too, right? I mean, their kids know they're not going to the NCAA tournament. Their kids know it. If they were going to make a tournament run, it had to start last night, and it didn't. They had to do something like beat a Tennessee, and they didn't do it.
Not even a little bit. And frankly, even more frustrating, kind of staying on this point a little bit with South Carolina. I mean, we're jumping everywhere, but whatever. It's talk that everybody wants right now. Is that not? I'm reading this from Bennett Hill. I noticed this tweet last night. South Carolina played well. They shot 59% from three on 22 attempts and got a double-double, 17-14 from Chris Silva, and lost by 12 last night.
Yeah, and we're down 20 a lot of the night.
I mean, good grief.
Well, number one, Tennessee's really, really good.
Well, that's where I'm going to dovetail. And I asked Jeffrey this in a minute, so everybody's going to hear the exact same thing twice. But I want to get your opinion, too. And you did not have the ability to hear Jeffrey's interview. So in some ways, that's good because you're blind to this. This is topics on the message board. I posed it to Jeffrey. I'm not going to give you his answer first.
Okay.
How do you differentiate an SEC Coach of the Year vote right now, as of today, between Rick Barnes, Kermit Davis, and Will Wade?
You know, it's funny. I was thinking about that last night because someone said Kermit Davis, Coach of the Year in the SEC, and I remember saying to myself, and I have a vote.
And at the start of the year, we both said, hey, Kermit gets him in the tournament, crown him in every way imaginable. Yes.
Yeah, and I have a vote. I actually have a vote here. And I asked myself, who would I vote for today? And it's down to those three.
Yeah, no doubt. It's one of those three.
Yeah. And for all the knocks on Will Wade, and I hear them, and I get them, and I see them, but his team's winning, man. I look at the job that Barnes has done. They've lost one time to Gonzaga, I think. They're They're a one seed in the tournament. They play beautiful basketball. They score at will. They defend. They play hard. It's difficult. Now, they did it last year, so you don't get
they
that.
They were picked second in the league, and they're finishing first from a straight standpoint of that.
Yeah. It's. I'm going to jump around here because this is what led me to think about it. So I was listening to an NBA podcast, and they were talking about the MVP voting. If you voted for MVP today, who would you vote for? And the consensus is it's down to three guys. It's James Harden, who won it last year, who's scoring at an incredible level and kind of has the Rockets on his back. He's sort of doing what Westbrook did 2 years ago. And it's Giannis Antetokounmpo, who is carrying Milwaukee, has made Milwaukee a legitimate contender. Giannis is a two-way player. He's a post guy. He drives to the basket. He's an amazing talent. And then it's Paul George with Oklahoma City, who, if the voting were done today, he would win the defensive MVP. Defensive player of the year would be his in an absolute landslide. He would get maybe every first-place vote. And he's probably right now the second or third best offensive player in the league. And his you know, PER rating is just off the chart. And so it's, how do you decide when all you can justify a vote for all three people? If I voted for Harden, you couldn't say, oh, Neil, you're an idiot. Or if I voted for Giannis, you couldn't say that. And if I voted for Paul George, you wouldn't go, oh, you just love the Thunder. No, you make a legitimate case for all three guys. And I thought about it with the SEC Coach of the Year. It's the same thing. I can make a legitimate case for Will Wade. They had a player shot and killed in September. A lot of teams don't rally around that all year long. It becomes a very difficult thing to get through. I can make a case for Barnes, obviously, because my God, they're number one in the country. They're a legitimate title contender.
And they have this big PR point of no top 100 players. And I mentioned this with Jeffrey.
Yeah.
Grant Williams offers Tennessee and Boston College. Vanderbilt did not offer him.
Yeah. Well, and Admiral Schofield.
Yeah.
I mean, he wasn't highly recruited, really. And then I look at Ole Miss. And I have the benefit of covering the program. And I know what happened with these same kids last year. These same kids last year, when they went on a losing streak, man, they folded. They folded. They folded. They didn't quit. I didn't use that word. But they lost all confidence. There was no confidence at all inside that program last year. None. And so Kermit Davis comes in there, and he's got three good guards. And if you have guards, you can win in college basketball. And he's got three really good guards, experienced, talented guards. And he's got a couple of bigs that they have their moments. But, I mean, last night, Dom didn't score, had three boards. I think Bruce went for 5-5. He had an okay game, but it wasn't anything dominant. So that's what you get out of your post. And you bring in a couple of freshmen who have some talent, but they're freshmen, and they're not elite national recruits or anything. It's not like you went out and got Zion Williamson and Cam Reddish and said, here, boys, join the club. Well, that's different. I think I'm still where I thought I would be, which is, if Kermit Davis takes this team to the NCAA tournament, I'm voting for him. Because it's been used against me already. And that's cool. I don't care. When they lost to Florida, I said, this just isn't an NCAA tournament team. And Chase, when you watch them play with an objective eye, they're not. They're not. But they win. It's like last night. They just win. There's no explanation for that team winning that game last night. They just win it. And people that go, oh, well, you're just whatever. No, I mean, I'm not trying to pick on the kids, but have you watched Zach Naylor and Luis Rodriguez this year? Have you watched them this year? Because I have. Neither one of them have done anything all season to indicate that they were ready to step up in a game at an arena like Auburn, in a game like that, and play 15 meaningful minutes each, and combine to go for 7-7. There was nothing that has happened, nothing, in the course of the previous. I'm not good at math. Ole Miss is now 17-7. So in the previous 23 games, there was absolutely nothing to support that belief. Nothing. So if you want to go, if you want to say, oh, well, I knew that would happen. No, you hoped that would happen, and you had this faith through your red and blue glasses that it would happen. But there was nothing to indicate empirically that that was ready to happen. Does that make sense?
Yeah, sure.
Fine. And so you're getting a guy like Kermit Davis that last night, to me, last night was the night that he won Coach of the Year, if they hold on. Now, they've got more work to do. It's not done. There's more basketball to be played, as you referenced. But if they get there, if they get to 11-7, 12-6, and they make the tournament, he's the Coach of the Year, because he took a team last night, and on numerous occasions, it really felt like Auburn was going to take the momentum. It felt like, okay, here comes Auburn's run. Here comes Auburn's run. All right, now here comes Auburn's run. And time after time, they'd slow it down, make a play. I thought he coached, and I wasn't there. I wish I had been there, because I think I'd be able to say this better, because I'll watch him coach sometimes. And sometimes he coaches with a foot up your ass. You know what I mean? I mean, he's on you. I thought last night there was more, hey, we're all in this. Not that he's never this way, but you understand what I'm saying. It was more of a, come on, we can do this. We can do this. But you could tell, man, we're just milking clock. We're just trying to get to the finish line. And they believe in him. They absolutely believe in him. They would follow him off the cliff right now. And that's not a knock on Andy Kennedy. It's not a knock on anybody that's been there before. It's just the guy has done something that the only people who predicted Ole Miss to the NCAA tournament this year are the people who predict Ole Miss to the NCAA tournament every year. And if you pick them there every year, it doesn't count when you luck into getting it right. Nobody outside of that locker room, and dude, I mean nobody, nobody outside of that locker room, nobody thought this team could do this. I picked them to finish 13th out of 14th, got no pushback at all. I wrote a preseason thing where I predicted them to go 7-11 in the league, and people at Ole Miss inside the program told me they thought that was fair. Now, I'm waiting for the you guys and all that stuff. That's coming. But because that's just the way it works when this stuff happens. But nobody at the time, not one person in November said, hey, you watch. You watch. And when they lost 5 out of 6 or 4 out of 5, whatever it was, 5 out of 6, I think.
Yeah, it was 5 out of 6.
When they lost 5 out of 6, you started hearing a little bit of that, hey, it's year one. Year one, some of the PR, smart. But apparently inside that program, that's not what happened. Inside that program, there was a push. They hit some buttons different, and they've played different. And those last 6 minutes against Texas A&M, I think we're going to look back and go, that's where the season turned.
Yeah, I was kind of laughing, because you could tell Kermit's just looking at the clock going, go, go, go. It reminded me of the movie Miracle, where they're playing the Russians, and Herb Brooks is like, just kind of like looking up, and it's like 4 minutes, 3 minutes, 2 minutes. And like, because you think this inevitability is coming, and then it just never comes, and the clock runs out, and you win the game. And it's sort of what last night felt like for Ole Miss. And then last minute, you know, Bruce Pearl kind of makes some errors there, and it is what it is. But nonetheless,
he did some quick math, and then he realized the math wasn't good. I think what happened was they looked at it, and he thought, well, there's a 6-7 second differential. Let's just play defense. And then when he realized it was like 3.5 second differential.
Not good, yeah.
And you foul the one guy that you know is going to make the free throws. I mean, you know, Terrence Davis missed a couple of free throws late. I mean, it's not like, that's the point, man. I mean, there were moments like Terrence misses those free throws. Auburn goes down, gets fouled, goes to the line, makes a couple of free throws. I think cuts it to 2 or 3. And you look up and Ole Miss has Shuler's got 4 fouls. TD obviously has four fouls. I think Stevens had four fouls. I'm looking to see on fouls real quick. Yeah, Bruce had four fouls. I mean, Ole Miss was – they overtime did not favor the Rebels. I mean, you know what I mean? It was I'm still kind of floored. I watched it, and look, it's not a major upset. I mean, they both teams were 16-7 going in. So, but I didn't see that one coming. Neither did Vegas. 8.5 is a pretty big line. I just didn't see it. And when I saw that Henson wasn't playing, I thought, man, I don't know. And then TD goes down, and you think, or goes out. When he went out the second time with like 16 minutes to go in the game, I thought there's just not enough. They don't have enough to hold on against these guys. And then, you know, Okiki, who's a hell of a player for Auburn. I mean, it's not like Auburn didn't play. And they didn't get some of the guard play they normally get. But Okiki goes for 23-11, Chase. You know what I mean? They get 10 from Harper. The job that they did defensively on Brown probably was the biggest story of the game. There's just a lot there. It was a huge win, and at the end of the season, if they're in the tournament, that's one of the games we'll definitely be talking about.
Yeah, we're going to go to Jeffrey in a minute to hear a lot from him. Jeffrey, really, really good today, so hang in for that in a second. Before we do that, I'll tell you about Scripted Jewelry, scriptedjewelry.com. Go to the website, see all the different options. I'm seeing things bought in Florida, even Mantachie, Mississippi. That might have been a Rebel Grove person. West Laco, Texas, getting a Madison pendant silver, as I'm reading off the site. Again, whatever you need, they've got it there for you. Turnaround times are great, and they will take care of you with a great selection and ability to put your special message on that special item for someone in your life. Maybe you took advantage of it for Valentine's Day, and that thing is being opened today by the person in your life. So again, when you check out, use Rebels10, R-E-B-E-L-S-1-0 for 10% off, and you can see all the different options at scriptedjewelry.com.
Podcast also brought to you by the Westin Jackson. You can gather at Estelle tonight. That'd be a great night to do it. Estelle Wine Bar and Bistro, sip on a creative craft cocktail. Enjoy their curated wine list. The food is just fantastic. It's open for breakfast, lunch, dinner, Sunday brunch. Chef Caden is terrific. His mission is to connect guests with the community through local partnerships. So gather at Estelle tonight. Obviously, you can't plan a Valentine's Day excursion. You've officially run out of time, but you can plan something for the summer, whether it's to Florida, whether it's to the Caribbean, whether it's to Scotland, California, whatever it may be. Get in touch with John Edwards, Regency Travel Incorporated in Memphis. He's part of Virtuoso. It's a worldwide network of travel partners that allows him to supply his clients with added values and unique benefits that are simply not available to other travelers. You call John, you give him some parameters, you give him a budget, and he'll give you options that you can't find on your own. 901-494-3387 or send him an email, jedwards@regencytravel.net. First-time clients save $50 off their first booked trip just by telling John you heard about Regency Travel on the podcast. We're also brought to you by Grenada Nissan. Check out Grenada Nissan. It's just off Interstate 55 in Grenada, Mississippi. They have a complete selection of new and previously owned Nissan vehicles. Go in, test drive one today. Tell Gene and Sandy that you heard about Grenada Nissan on the Oxford Exxon podcast, and you'll get Rebel savings on top of the already great deals at Grenada Nissan. It's GrenadaNissanUSA.com. And we're brought to you by Harry Alexander. Harry is an Oxford-based REMAX Legacy Realty agent. He's been in Oxford more than four decades. No one knows the residential and condo market in Oxford better than Harry. Go to his site. He'll prove it to you. HarryAlexander.com. Click on the Properties and Neighborhoods tab. Filter through by what you are looking for, and then send him an email, ha@harryalexander.com. AMA brought to you by Oxford University Bank, OUB, locally owned and operated right here in Oxford. When you deposit money at OUB, that money and the vast majority of the bank's profits go right back into the Oxford community. OUB gives you the comfort of home, all the benefits the big mega banks provide, all the technology and products you can want, all with the personal touch. When you call OUB, you speak directly with a live person, all without having to press 10 buttons, without a five-minute wait. OUB offers its customers the absolute best cash checking account. It's called Kasasa, and with Kasasa, OUB will pay customers 2.5% interest on their balances up to $50,000. And with Kasasa, ATM fees nationwide are refunded. To learn more about OUB, check out liveoxfordbankoxford.com or call 662-234-6668. OUB is FDIC insured.
Podcast is brought to you by Mastercuts Lawn and Landscape. Give them a call for a free quote at 662-607-7773. You can also send them an email, at info@goatmastercuts.com. We always appreciate when you mention Rebel Grove when you do that, because they'll build structures for you, decks, fences, and more, even custom playgrounds, or just sign that contract to take care of your yard all year long with Master Cuts. They also handle plenty of flower bed repair. They're doing that for me next week, along with all the other services that I use them for. So again, get a free quote, 662-607-7773. Now Jeffrey Wright on the Patterson and Earhart hotline. Jeffrey, good morning. A day that I know you love. I know Valentine's Day is one of your favorite days of the year, correct?
Oh, how could you not be just filled with love whenever you see the sight of store-bought chocolates, overpriced flowers, unnecessary gifts just for the sake of trying to not get in trouble? How could you not love a day like today?
As a text conversation that we had with a bunch of people yesterday, competition is a real thing on Valentine's Day.
Competition's a real thing, and also let's keep it real. What else is a real thing is trying to determine what is a lie and what is a lie and what is something that is actually a statement of fact. Because here's the deal. If every statement that one makes could be taken as fact, I wouldn't be, whoever wouldn't be in a certain predicament. But evidence has suggested that sometimes everything a woman says is not everything she means. So therefore, trying to determine what is and isn't a trap is quite taxing on the brain.
You think this is the holiday version of the "am I fat" conversation?
Oh my God. Yes. Okay. I think this is.
So do you think you're prepared for today?
God, I hope so.
Okay. Fair enough.
God, I hope.
Although you guys were out of town last weekend, right?
Yes. And that was kind of Valentine's Day.
Well, it wasn't. It was not February 14th, and no one was in, situations where they're around other girls.
Well, Chase, my answer to that would be I will use the same answer that the good people of the Church of Christ gave me about Good Friday. It is literally just another day. You should celebrate your love the exact same each and every day. It does not matter if Jesus Christ was nailed to a cross on this particular day for your sins, essentially encompassing the entire point of your religion. That does not matter. It is no different on October 12th than it is on that day.
It's maybe the biggest thing that you and I have never talked about. Those YouTube videos from when you guys were in Switzerland in college made its way, and you were playing the guitar. Church of Christ don't use instruments, Jeffrey. I feel like you were causing a problem even right then.
Well, as I pointed out my freshman year, when I was told the early church didn't have music, to which I responded, "Well, did the early church have indoor plumbing? Did the early church have air conditioning? Because we seem to have that here. So I don't understand why guitar means I'm going to hell, but indoor plumbing is A-okay."
All right, fair enough.
I'm convinced whoever started the Church of Christ was just, they couldn't play an instrument, but they probably had a pretty good voice. And so
you play your strengths.
Right. And so they wanted to show off.
Didn't want the guy coming in with the drum set.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Musicians are show offs, but singing is of the Lord.
Okay. Ole Miss basketball last night goes into Auburn Arena, wins 60-55. And, going into last night, it was more of, hey, hold serve, got to go probably find this road win somewhere. I mean, people gave them a whole lot of chances to win outright at Auburn last night. Entire script now has flipped for Ole Miss. They've just sort of got to hold serve and just not screw it up the rest of the way. And, frankly, they're playing all of a sudden for maybe a top four seed and potentially a top 6-7 type seed in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, I thought if you look at it, I thought the difference between last night and say like the Alabama game, Ole Miss did a great job of making Auburn uncomfortable in doing what they want to do. And Auburn loves to get out into transition, and whereas like a lot of teams like to get, like for instance, Memphis likes to get out in transition, but they like to do it to try to get easy layups and whatnot. Auburn likes to get out in transition to get threes and just kind of barrage you with threes. And Ole Miss did an outstanding job, I felt like, the entire night taking that away. And you could sense Auburn's frustration the entire night. And I don't think you can say enough about the job that Kermit Davis has done with this team, because this is essentially the exact same team that we saw last year that finished last in the, not only, of course, there are no divisions anymore in SEC basketball, but finished last in SEC play. And I mean, this is, barring some type of meltdown, the likes which I do not expect, he has made this an NCAA tournament team, and you cannot commend him enough, and really doing so with the exact same core roster as last year. And then the other thing I thought Ole Miss has done is they've built a team that travels really well. And by traveling really well, that helps your metrics so much. Like, one thing I think that always killed Andy's teams is he didn't get big wins on the road. It was almost like all the big wins came at home. The goal was to not have bad losses on the road. But, I mean, this team, if you look at it this year, almost every single one of their big wins is away from home. Like Baylor, away from home.
Mississippi State.
State, away from home. The Auburn game, away from home.
Even played really well against Butler. I mean, you know, early on, before they even kind of knew how to win, they were sort of still scrambling a little at that point.
And now the bigger problem is Butler has turned out to not be what we thought they were going to be. But yes, I mean, early on in the year, yes, that was very much the case. And, you know, if you're just looking at it from a metric standpoint, one thing that used to always hurt Ole Miss, I felt like, under Andy when it came this time of the year, was metrically they didn't stack up. And obviously Andy would point out that the schedule was a problem, and it was, but I think a bigger problem was not having the big wins away from home, and Ole Miss right now has multiple.
Yeah, and I mean, Kermit's trying to build a program that does travel and plays well on the road, with different ways that he's going about things. Just from a stylistic standpoint, even though that's not necessarily the way this team is built from a style standpoint. You mentioned Kermit and the job he's done at Ole Miss. It's a three-way race right now for SEC Coach of the Year between Rick Barnes, Will Wade, and Kermit Davis. How do you measure Barnes? Because they go from, like, basically worst to first last year. They're picked second, but then now they're a national championship caliber team. They're a Final Four caliber team with no top 100 players. How do you sort of find it? It's almost kind of like hitter versus pitcher for MVP in baseball. I don't know how to compare these three guys as I would try to make a vote for this.
My general, when it comes to like Coach of the Year awards, my general, I guess, default setting is, who did more with less? And I think that's exactly what you point out. While no one can argue what Kermit is doing right now is anything short of, I don't want to say like a miraculous coaching job, but anything short of, on a scale of 1 to 10, a 9 on the coaching job front, then that person probably wears maroon and white. Or that person just doesn't like Kermit Davis, maybe from past reasons. But at the end of the day, Tennessee has built a national title contender and a legitimate national title contender without a top 100 player. And they've done it with seniors, with, when you watch Tennessee play, they're one of the best watches in college basketball, because they're so precise. Like, they don't screw up, and they're physical. Like, all the things that you kind of, I think if a coach had his dream team, well, maybe not my dream team, because my dream team would basically just look like Cal's. I would just go get the best players every single year so that I don't have to do a ton of coaching. That would be nice. But like, you know, if you have friends that are in coaching, a lot of their, you know, if they talk about building their dream teams, it's like teams like this. It was the the Villanova team last year with Jay Wright. Like, it's these teams that are just so precise, so well coached, and have a little more experience and play a little more physical. Tennessee's more physical, obviously, than Villanova was last year. But I just think that has to be the default. To me, the tiebreaker has to be you got to give the nod of the cap to Rick Barnes, because, I mean, good God, Chase, an eight, what is it now, 19-game winning streak?
Yeah, and Grant Williams sitting here, a National Player of the Year candidate, when coming out of high school, Tennessee and Boston College were his only two offers that even made any sense in the world. Vanderbilt didn't offer, Virginia didn't offer, and then it was a bunch of just small mid-majors after that.
I mean, like, to me, that has to be the dividing line for me. And then another thing, like, look at it. I mean, do you think Rick Barnes is more happy about what he's doing right now, or do you think he's more happy when he goes and looks at Texas?
Oh, it's 50-50, because you've got to think,
baby,
he's going to spend his life looking at Texas going, yeah. You know, Shaka getting a lot of mileage out of one season. A lot of mileage.
Yeah, he is. And I don't fault him. And also, keep in mind with this about Shaka, his wife's rich, so he's good.
He's
going to be rich. His wife's rich. Like, everything's A-okay.
He's going to go to bed all right tonight, is what you're telling me.
He'll be fine.
Take a break in our talk with Jeffrey to tell you about Community Mortgage, Oxford, Memphis, Soto County, and Chattanooga. Underwriting and processing is done in Memphis. They're getting local underwriting. Understands your market. A leader in condo financing and the float down option, which allows you to lock in the current rate. But if rates go down before you close, you get that lower rate. Getting back into house buying season for the year as the spring's coming soon. 662-234-2704 or jlo at communitymtg.com.
Jeffrey Wright, Aaron Fitt, and other guests join us on the Patterson and Earhart Hotline. Patterson and Earhart they specialize in personal injury law and real estate law, but theirs is a general practice that can handle any of your legal needs. When you contact Patterson and Earhart, you speak to one of the partners in the firm, and that's who will handle your case, not some paralegal at a faceless corporate firm. If Patterson and Earhart can't help you, they'll refer you to someone who can. John Calvin Patterson and Wes Earhart are Ole Miss guys. They're local guys. And when you call them, you're going to get one of them on the phone within the same day, guaranteed. So whether you've been injured in a car wreck or have other legal issues, give them a call, 662-526-1992, or check out their website, pelaws.com. Your initial consultation is free. We'll be telling you about some new promotions and such at Dead Soxy here soon. Probably taping a soft verbal podcast presented by Dead Soxy here in the next few days. Anyway, I'll just tell you this about Dead Soxy. Go to their site, deadsoxy.com. Enter promo code Rebel Grove at checkout. Get 30% off all items, including sale items. And spring around the corner, now would be a good time to start thinking about those showless socks. If you're like me and you can't stand wearing loafers or whatnot without a sock, you can't stand wearing nothing between you and the shoe. But you want to wear the shoe, this would be a perfect solution. They stay cool, they stay up, they're stylish, and they're absolutely perfect for the summertime as we get closer to it. DeadSoxy.com, promo code RebelGrove to save 30% off every item.
Podcast is brought to you by Visit Oxford. Visit OxfordMS.com/events. Check it out for contact info. If you're scrambling a little bit for Valentine's Day today, they can take care of you. You'll see some option there on the calendar of events, or just through the different ways to contact restaurants, florists, and more in town to take care of you today. As always, that's visitoxfordms.com/events. Now back to Jeffrey Wright on the Patterson and Earhart Hotline. All right. You mentioned this radio station, ran a little of it, had the interview with Ross Bjork, had the town hall meetings starting this week. I witnessed one on Monday night. Just overall, where do you kind of fall on the town hall meetings, the rehashing, just kind of the way they're kind of going about it right now versus just sort of do your job and move on and stop talking about it?
My first thought was that takes some guts.
Okay.
And I tip my cap to them, because I think it's one thing to sit there and say, okay, we're going to do these town halls and you know, you maybe think that, okay, well, people are a little different in person than they are on Twitter, online, and maybe some emails that we've read. So to me, and you can tell me better, obviously, than I can. I'm primarily basing my impressions on your column as well as your interview with him. But to me, that it wasn't a hostile crowd, but it was certainly, I think it was an angrier crowd than perhaps Ross or Michael were expecting.
It's an engaged crowd, because if you're passive, you're not even going to these meetings. You're not taking the time to do this. You're not getting in the car when there's no social element. There's no food. There's no alcohol. There's no cash bar. There's none of this. It's just going and talking. And so, for half of it, it was a frustrated crowd. It was a couple questions that, you know, if I was up on the stage, I'd have been uncomfortable. And I thought that it wasn't. And a lot of fans are going to roll their eyes, and you really have to go to one of these to understand what I'm saying. I told this to Neil yesterday. The answers were important, but they were kind of secondary to the attempt. It was the way the setup worked. It was, hey, we're not trying to dodge you. We're not trying to smoke and mirrors you. We're going to put two microphones up at the front of the room. We're going to pass a microphone around the crowd, and I'm just going to stand here and talk to you. And I thought just the way that it was set up was the big thing that eventually gained them respect with the room, because they said, okay, you came here, and you didn't try to throw all this other crap at us. You just talked to us. And at the end of the day, for a lot of Ole Miss fans, they just wanted him to talk to them.
I think they wanted to talk to him. And I think the other big aspect of it is, so many Ole Miss fans are just so frustrated. Yeah. And they're angry. They're angry at the NCAA, really angry at State. And, you know, they're angry at Ross. Or if most people have brains, they should be angry at Freeze. They should just be angry, like, at everything, because they feel like what they've paid for, what they've supported, has done them wrong. And I agree with you. I think it took guts, and I think I could make a case for, in terms of the mood of the moment and the decision that was made, I think I could make a case that these town halls are probably one of the best fan relations moves that Ross has done in his tenure, because, like you said, man, like, you and I have, and Neil, for how many ever years, we have always advocated, if you are transparent, if you are honest, if you are forthright, and I understand you can't legitimately, you can't say everything that you might be able to say in an off the record conversation or whatnot, but he gave the answers, particularly that he gave you on the podcast. If you were able to use a little bit of listening comprehension, he gave some really solid, I sound like the man he was talking about, gives really solid answers.
Well, and it's that deal where, look, some people are just going to be pissed until his tenure's over, whether it's in 6 months or 6 years or 16 years. But at the end of the day, he said this to start the podcast, to start the town hall meeting, he's going to give you an answer, and some people aren't going to like the answer. But at some point, you're either going to have to kind of accept that and move on, or it's just going to be a thing forever. And that's up to the individual fan.
You asked him some tough questions, too. And did you feel, like, I'll say, there is also a difference between the conversation that the interviewer is having versus what the conversation that the listener will digest. But I didn't feel like he dodged a single question in there.
No, I thought he was in a forthcoming mood, to the point that I kind of wish that interview had been in a lighted room, in a conference room, because I would have been better. Because when I kind of went back and was editing and listening.
Been after like 7:30 p.m.
Well, that's a good point, too. I was a little tired. But yeah, you listen to questions for 90 minutes. And this interview is, I mean, to set this up for people, because I don't guess I even told this, we're sitting in a Ford Explorer in the back seat, just with a, a
phenomenal card. I mean, some could make the argument that best value car out there on the market.
It's very true. Clark Ford, 662-257-1900. With a microphone just sitting between us, it's pitch black dark, and I've got a notepad with a phone light on it. So I'm missing questions. I'm trying to figure out the next question without even kind of listening to him. When I went back, I went, you know, that was the best mood I've seen him in for an interview, and it wasn't wasted, but there was more there if you really had a proper setup for it, I guess is the way to put it.
I completely understand that. I mean, it's kind of like the difference of certainly in radio, 9 times out of 10, your best interviews are always going to be in studio in person.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say it's going to happen every time, because I there are a couple of people that come to mind that are actually better on the phone, I think, than they are in person. Maybe because if they're on the phone, a lot of people like to like walk around and to help them think. And so there are some people I think that are better that way. But most people are going to be better in studio. And as you say, like when we're in studio, hey, the lights are on. Like, you know what I mean? Like that it sets up that environment that you're talking about. But I mean, for God's sakes, the guy answered truthfully about the NCAA's investigation process on the record. The guy, I think maybe the biggest nugget that he gave was understanding when an investigation is occurring is the point of the investigation to find the facts, to punish the wrongdoings, or is there a different target? I thought that was a very candid answer to hear on the record, because that's something that, as far as, I guess maybe Jerry Tarkanian said something similar on the record, but I haven't heard many administrators say something like that on the record. And I think he's absolutely right. I mean, I think the bigger problem is I don't know how you go about fixing the organization problems, because I think one of the biggest problems that we see with the NCAA is everything is done by a committee, and every rule that they come up with, this would be the best example I could give you. All of these rules, these complicated rules that don't make sense, they actually make sense if you think about it in this context. It's the exact result of what you would see is if you brought a group of people in a room that all they do is talk to each other, and they come up with all these rules together, and it all gets released at the end. It's very similar to like these new golf rules that we're seeing with the USGA and the RNA. Like, you got a group of like-minded people that got into a room and started coming up with ideas, and there's no like oversight. There's nothing to say, like, whatever they came up with, like, that's law. And if you would have like an editor in our business, they would throw out a lot of this stuff, because they'd be like, listen, this doesn't make sense, that doesn't make sense. And you have to come up with, I hesitate to say it, because I just, in general, committees accomplish so little.
They're echo chambers.
You need an editor. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Real world guy.
Yes, you need, we've always made the joke for years, we need hand raised guy, but you need, I don't know what you call the position, but you need an executive.
Yeah. Got about 90 seconds left with you. We had Aaron Fitt on the podcast today as well. You've followed this probably longer than I have. How important is this year for Mike Bianco's tenure as we close?
Oh boy, it feels like a big one, doesn't it?
It does.
Number
one signing class, possibly wasted if you don't get to at least a Super Regional.
I can't remember what your note was. This will be the second true freshman to start an opening weekend. Is that what your note was?
Yeah, Mark Holloman was one, yeah. And then Cody Satterwhite would have been two, but a rainout happened.
Okay, so the sad thing was I remember Mark Holloman's first start.
Yeah.
So that was a wonderful trip down memory lane. Thank you for that. Mark's little brother, also best 14-year-old baseball player I've ever seen. Matt Holloman. Good God, the kid could rake. Yes, I think that's exactly it, because you had this number one signing class. You were a national seed last year. You didn't get out of your own region. You had Tennessee Tech throwing a right fielder with a 9 ERA that shut you down.
Lost the regional in 16 at home.
I mean, I don't know. It's a postseason sport. Like, I don't know how else to say it. Like, it is a postseason sport, and if you are consistently a disappointment in the postseason – and really your one exception is the year that you weren't a disappointment in the postseason, but you have basically 18 other examples of being a disappointment, I think it's going to taint your resume, don't you?
There's two black marks on this thing. One, he's never won a regional away from home. Every time he's won a regional, it's been in Oxford. He hasn't done what most SEC teams do, which is just go kind of take one when they're a two seed sometimes. And then two, it's one super regional since 2009. 2014. I mean, that is one black mark in a hell of a rest of a resume, but it's also a hell of a black mark. So it's complicated, but
and like this is
why this appears to be that year that flips it one way or the other a little bit for a lot of fans.
Like, by the flip side, take like Tom Izzo. Tom Izzo has lots of disappointing years, considering how good the Michigan State job is, considering how good their talent is, but he is extremely good at making runs, because in the end, it is a postseason sport, and he gets it.
Well, in Mississippi State.
Yes.
Mississippi State, regular season-wise, is nowhere near the program at Ole Miss is. They're nowhere near as consistent as Ole Miss is, but they've done a better job in the postseason.
Opportunistic.
Yeah, they are. All right. Who's on the show today, Jeff, as we close?
We will have a sex therapist. Dr. Jennifer Valley will join the show. So heads up, dudes. You won't want to miss that. That's 10:25 a.m. Of course, you can catch it on the podcast.
Yeah.
Jeff joins live from the road on the first hour. Chris Harrington will talk some Grizzlies. And then, surprise, Eric's actually back in studio today, so I don't have to do the afternoon show.
Excellent. Appreciate it, bud.
All right, guys.
Thanks to Jeffrey for his time and opinions today. I know he had a busy day. He had a long show planned for his actual day job. He gives us this time before he gets his workday started on every Thursday, so appreciate that. Podcast also brought to you by the Blow Dry Bar Oxford, 662-638-3310, theblowdrybar@gmail.com, 1801 Jackson Avenue in Oxford, Tuesday through Friday, 10 to 6. Saturday 10 to 3, and guys, you're scrambling, you forgot, you didn't take advantage of Valentine's Day, just head on over today. Tell them about rebelgrove.com. They'll even give you a discount on one of their very, very popular blowouts. They will take care of you, one of the 2018, or actually the 2018 best new business in Oxford. So treat the special lady of your life there at Blow Dry Bar Oxford. Again, 662-638-3310, there on Jackson Avenue, especially today for Valentine's Day.
Podcast also brought to you by Home 2 Suites by Hilton in Oxford, 101 South Lamar Boulevard. Give them a call, 662-238-3400, 662-238-3400. Make your reservations for Ole Miss football season. Make your reservations for double-decker weekend. It's usually a pretty fun weekend in Oxford, and I think there might still be a little bit of availability. Don't hold me to this. For Grove Bowl weekend in early April, April the 6th, I think. Florida will be in town for baseball at the same time. So it's a great place to stay for baseball season, for football season. It's about a mile from the square, about a mile from campus. So it'll be a perfect home base for you. It's pet-friendly, brand-new facility, new restaurants opening up around it as well. Very convenient. Great staff. You'll love it. 662-238-3400. The Ole Miss women's hoops team back in the pavilion tonight for a matchup with the Mississippi State Bulldogs. Tip-off set for 7 p.m. For tickets, you can visit olemisstix.com. The Ole Miss baseball season has arrived. Join the Rebels at Swayze Field on Friday, February the 15th, as they host Wright State at 4 p.m. Tickets can be purchased by visiting olemisstix.com. And the Ole Miss men's basketball team, fresh off a road win at Auburn, return to the pavilion on Saturday, February the 16th, as they take on Missouri at 2:30 p.m. Limited tickets remain and can be purchased by visiting OleMissTix.com.
Podcast is brought to you by G&M Pharmacy. Give them a call at 662-236-2222 to transfer those medications over. They make it easy. They make it simple. I have done it. They take care of all of it for you, and you're going to get local service. You're also going to get free delivery to your home, your workplace. You're going to get MedSync to put all your medicine on a schedule in a very easy-to-use way. And they also have the compound creams to take care of multiple things all at one time. Those is at G&M Pharmacy on South Lamar in Oxford. Again, 662-236-2222. We'll go to Aaron Fitt in 1 minute. Before we do that, a little bit of news coming out yesterday that, let's see. Oh, sorry, got a text. I had to read. Houston Roth, Ole Miss's, sorry, I'm all over the place all of a sudden.
No, I'm reading one, too, that we'll talk about when we're finished.
Okay, Houston Roth, Tuesday starter, we thought on Tuesday against Arkansas State, was going to be the first guy out of the bullpen. Talked about this a little bit yesterday. I'll talk about it more on the message board. I'll talk about it tonight if I do another video chat that Neil can make fun of. But point being with the –
not making fun at all.
Well, you're not criticizing, you're making fun. Those are not the same thing.
I'm having fun. Maybe I'm a little jealous. I'm a little jealous of the fact that you can sit in front of the camera and do that. Okay. I'm not self.
I told you the big screen kind of freaked me out. I'm just being honest. So
yeah, if I saw myself on a big screen, that would have been the end. That
yeah, like had you gotten a tweet and you were like on a Jeffrey size TV,
that'd be the end. No more.
No more.
I would be speechless. I would say, oh no, 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 no.
Okay.
The smaller the screen, the more I'm comfortable with it.
Okay. So, burying the lead here, Houston Roth on Tuesday during a pitcher-fielder practice, which basically means covering first base, he injured his non-throwing shoulder. Test revealed an AC joint sprain. He tripped and fell, best I can tell, from what Ole Miss told me. Mike Bianco is listing him as questionable for the weekend, though I do not expect him to play this weekend. I'll be shocked if he does. And I really don't necessarily expect him to pitch Tuesday either, but we'll get more information on that as the time comes. This is a 100% complete guess, but my guess is that Doug Nikhazy would be next up for that Tuesday start against the Red Wolves, the freshman left-hander that looked pretty good throughout the preseason. But it's a blow to Ole Miss, obviously. But I'll tell you what, Neil. I don't know how long he's out. The good news here, and there's a couple of good news. I mean, it's been a little bit of Pollyanna, but it's true too. Is A, it's not an injury that is going to get worse. It's pain management at this point. Number two, it's not going to affect him once it's healthy. It's not one of those, oh, it's this thing's going to linger and it's whatever. It's the non-throwing shoulder. Had we been talking about a throwing shoulder, we got a whole other situation here. And then three, if he's out a couple weeks, 3 weeks, it's times he's not throwing. I mean, if nothing else, he's going to be fresher later in the year. So overall, Ole Miss has enough arms. I don't think this is a big deal, frankly, other than just not having one of your main guys to open the season.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. I think if you have him back by league play, you're okay.
Yeah, you got 4 weeks. You got a month.
You know, other guys get some experience. You get to, as you said, get some answers on some guys that maybe you wouldn't have gotten answers on. No, you can – look, it's – if you're given the option of having the injury happen or not have the injury happen, you choose to not have the injury happen. I'm not, of course.
Yeah.
I'm not the guy that says, oh, this is a good thing, but it's not the end of the world. And like you said, it's not his throwing shoulder. If it was his throwing shoulder, it would be pretty significant. It's not. And so I'll give you another. If you're looking for silver linings, now this is a little bit, it's not spin. It's not really spin. It's true. Sometimes guys don't have a lot left in the tank by the end of the season. His tank will be a little more full than others. The end of the year. So, you know, this, because it's my understanding is that he's hoping to return by league play.
And I think that's a fair, if you get him back faster, great, but I think that's the fair assessment of this.
Yeah. So, you know, we'll see. Not the end of the world. Doesn't have to be the end of the world, and it can end up being a blessing. It's one of those deals. It's like last night, you know, you don't have Blake Henson. That's not good. You offered Kermit Davis, hey, you can either have Blake Henson or not have Blake Henson. Which way do you want to go? He would have said, I think I'll go ahead and take Blake Henson. But they might have really helped themselves last night by Now, you know, when Luis Rodriguez takes the floor for a few minutes, or when you have to use Zach Naylor for a few minutes, maybe those guys play with more confidence now. Maybe those guys, I mean, Naylor scored five and rimmed out another three that on a heat check shot that I thought the damn thing was going to fall. And my point is not to steer it from baseball to basketball, but sometimes adversity leads you to discovering things about yourself that you would not have otherwise discovered. Because if Blake Henson plays 27 minutes last night, I dare say that those guys don't play like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, you can take a negative and make it positive. I dare say, Chase, that you can take a lemon and make lemonade.
You can. So that was obviously something we needed to get out there. Aaron does also mention it during his interview coming up here on the hotline. So we'll do that now. We'll go to Aaron Fitt on the Patterson and Earhart hotline. Aaron, thanks for joining me today. Always good to hear from you. We're going to get to plenty of baseball, but you and I are our Facebook friends. I've got to ask you, is there anywhere in the world you did not see in the offseason? You were everywhere from Singapore to really all over. What was going on?
Yeah, you gotta take advantage of that vacation time when you can get it, right? Yeah, we got around pretty good. Singapore, Indonesia. We went to Hawaii. Where else did we go? Oh, we went to South America, you know, Easter Island, Machu Picchu. So, yeah, we touched the bases.
Is that something you've done before? Was it kind of the one-time trip or what?
No, we try to travel as much as we can in the off-season. So,
okay.
It's, like I said, it's, you know, I'm out of commission from January through June, so we take it when we can get it.
Yeah, you know, my wife gets really frustrated anytime Ole Miss gets really good and she's worried I might just be, you know, might make the Omaha trip, even a super regional trip. I mean, it's your point, though. Any family, they know you're just gone. It is what it is. You don't exist for a few months.
Yeah, just don't even, you know, actually I watched the Super Bowl at my friend's house and I had to say goodbye to his kids for 6 months, you know, and they were very sad, you know, it's going to be a while until Uncle Aaron comes by again, but that's just how it is, you know, it's the reality of this business.
Yeah, so let's get into a little baseball. Ole Miss is going to throw Gunnar Hoglund on Sunday against Wright State. He's only the second true freshman that Mike has ever thrown on the opening weekend of the year, Mark Holloman being the other one in 2003. You know, you look around the league, and there's so many impact freshmen. You've got this weird mix of, and I know different reasons, but Marceau and Hoagland and Ginn and Kumar Rocker at Vanderbilt. Is there one common thread, in your opinion? We've kind of been talking about this for a while and coming up with some different reasons between CBAs and teams kind of being more content to let guys walk. But why do you think this past year we did see this influx of first-round talent showing up in college?
Well, I just think college baseball has become more and more desirable, you know, for these high round guys because of the experience that has been created. I mean, there's been so much investment, as we all know, and especially in the SEC, that you're getting like a much more intense experience than you would get in the low minors. You know, if you're going to develop for 3 years at Ole Miss or LSU, you know, there's a lot to be said for that. You know, it's just, I think it's common sense. It's just the facilities are awesome, the fan bases are awesome. So, you know, I'm sure we'll see a lot more of that going forward.
Do you, I guess, kind of what are your thoughts? Do you follow him much along the way with Hoagland? He's been really, really impressive. He's the guy that made so much national news his senior year of high school by not walking anybody in the regular season. I think he told me he had 6 3-ball counts during the regular season of his senior year of high school. And I kind of thought, well, that just means he's overpowering everybody. He's just throwing it down the middle. But he's gotten here, and he hasn't necessarily gotten more fine. He's not necessarily nibbling corners, and he's still being pretty productive. He's an interesting guy as a first-year player here.
He's very polished. Yeah, that stat that you threw at us there a minute ago was remarkable. They've only thrown one other true freshman in the first weekend. Just shows you, you know, how ready this guy is, and certainly that's what he stands out for is the command and the competitiveness and the ability to mix, you know, three pitches for strikes where he wants to. It's very uncommon for freshmen to have that kind of pitchability, and so you know, even at 88 to 90, like he was in the fall when I was in there, and I know he can touch better than that, but even at that velocity, he can be very effective because he's just got such good feel.
What do you kind of make of this team? Because I'm around them every single day, and the storyline here has been, you know, potentially their best regular season in school history was ruined by that Monday against Tennessee Tech, and there's just sort of been this fog over this program for a while as they've lost two straight home regionals. They've only been to one super regional since 2009, and that was the year they went to the College World Series in 14. But then Mike's one of the most consistent coaches in the league. It's one of those deals where it seems like fans, they really like this roster. They know they're going to be really good, and then they're almost kind of scared to like them all at the same time.
Yeah, I think the fans need to realize this is going to be a really good team. It's going to be a really, really good team. I know that they lost some experienced arms in the rotation, but boy, you got to love the talent coming back. And certainly, I really like the depth of that pitching staff. And I think Will Etheridge is going to be a star on Friday nights. And we talked about Hoagland, and I'm very high on Doug Nikhazy, the lefty. And, you know, once Houston Roth gets going, that's another weapon. So I'm not worried at all about the rotation, and I just love the lineup. I mean, there's so much power here, so much experience. They're so good defensively, especially up the middle, you know, with Kessinger at shortstop and, you know, whoever plays second base. I'm not sure how that race is shaken out with Adams and Cervidio, but those are both good defenders. And, of course, you got, you know, the strongest arm in the country behind the plate, Cooper Johnson, and you got Olenek in center field who can track it down with anybody. And, you know, Gindel's got great range in the outfield. I mean, they just have they have a lot of good players. I mean, there's no other way to look at it. They won a lot of games last year, and they're going to win a lot of games this year.
Yeah, I'll kind of let you react in real time a little bit. They are going to play Cervidio at second base on Friday night, as long as Kessinger's healthy. You know, he sprained an ankle a couple weeks ago. He had not run outside as of yesterday, so I'm not 100% sure if he can play, but that's the beauty of Anthony Cervidio, is he can move over to shortstop if needed, and then you have Adams there at second. But it looks like Cervidio has at least won that battle. And then for now, just because of the bat, Tim Elko is in right field over Carl Gindel, just because he's hit so well in the preseason leading up to now.
It's a good problem to have is competition, you know, and they've got a lot of it. They've got a lot of depth, which I think gives you a lot of peace of mind. You know, if somebody gets hurt or somebody doesn't perform, you know, they've got moving pieces and some versatile guys. Obviously, you know, Olenek is a nice luxury because in a pinch he can play wherever you need him to play. You know, and you've got Cockrell. If he doesn't DH, he could play a corner outfield spot. You know, obviously Dillard could catch if he needed to, you know, or play first base if he needed to, really. I mean, you can do anything you want with that guy. So it's just a really neat lineup with the way the pieces fit together, and it's going to be a fun team to watch.
I'll go around the league a little bit. Who did Florida piss off? Because I look at their schedule, they've got to go to Vanderbilt, to LSU, to Ole Miss, and to Georgia. I mean, that could be a team that wins the national title, but then end up 17-13 in the SEC and just be trying to host there at one point.
Yeah, that's crazy. Wow, to have all those series on the road. You know, as we know in the SEC, so much of it depends on what kind of schedule you get. I mean, if you miss the right teams in either division, it's a real advantage for you because of that unbalanced schedule. And certainly having to go on the road against, you know, four top 10 teams, I think. I mean, that's daunting. But and that's a younger team this year, too. They lost some of their experienced guys, so we'll see how they handle that. But you're right, it's a team that has a ton of talent, and by the time we get to June, you would imagine that experience of going on the road will benefit them, and they're going to be dangerous in the postseason for sure.
Obviously, they've got Dyson, but as I was looking at some mock drafts early on, there's not a lot of draft-eligible SEC arms in this class. There's a lot of position players. It seems much more position player heavy from a draft eligible right now, but that's just because there's so many young kids throwing. It seems like next year is going to be that wealth that comes up from a draft eligible standpoint. So in a lot of ways, did you kind of agree that in the SEC it could be that kind of fun year where you've got so many young kids taking on new roles, and you've kind of got these freshmen and sophomores that down the road we're going to see all over the top part of the draft?
Yeah, you're right, and I think that trend probably holds nationally too, that the scouts that I've talked to think this is a kind of a weak pitching class in college baseball around the country, but a very strong position player class. So certainly the SEC kind of sets the tone in college baseball. And so, I think you're right. I think that's the case this year in the SEC, is that a lot of the better arms are underclassmen, you know, like Tanner Burns, of course, and the sophomores that Florida has, and you know, Emerson Hancock at Georgia, and you know, looking around the league, there's a bunch of guys like that. Certainly the freshmen, Landon Marceau and Hoagland, and you know, and Kumar Rocker at Vanderbilt. I mean, there's a lot of JT Ginn. Didn't talk about that guy. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of really, really talented big power arms in the freshman and sophomore classes.
You mentioned Vanderbilt. I mean, it seems like everybody's so high on them. Is there a weakness? I mean, if something goes wrong for that team, what is it?
Well, you know, I just think they're so deep that they're going to find the right combinations, but it may take a little time to figure out what their optimal combinations are, especially in the mound. I mean, because you got three starters back with Drake Fellows and Patrick Raby and Mason Hickman, and they're all good, but they're, you know, maybe don't have as much upside as some of the other guys that are competing for starting jobs, like Rocker or you know, Zach King. I mean, those are guys that could conceivably beat out some of those older players that are more experienced, that have, you know, less electric stuff. And so for me, I think that the big question mark is, you know, what combinations do they settle on? And I think they'll use the pre-conference to figure that out. I think their lineup is a little more stability, you know, more kind of known quantities that probably won't get beat out. I mean, third base would be the one spot where there's maybe some competition there, but they're very, very deep in the lineup and on the mound, and I have a hard time envisioning a scenario where they are not really, really good.
Yeah, you know, we just kind of transitioning into the West a little bit, obviously, with most of the listeners being Ole Miss fans. Ole Miss and LSU missing Vanderbilt this season from a scheduling standpoint, and Ole Miss really, as much as you can, hits the goal mine because they miss Vanderbilt, they miss Florida, and they miss South Carolina, who's kind of been a thorn in their side throughout the years. So schedule sets up really well for Ole Miss. You know, what's funny about them is the midweek is really hard. They've got the two at Louisville. East Carolina comes into Mississippi for a back-to-back night of playing at Mississippi State and then at Ole Miss. It's probably the luxury for Mike Bianco when he does get Houston Roth back or whomever is they're going to kind of run up a lot more even RPI points in the midweek than in addition to the SEC season as well. But, you know, they're not really tested on the weekend a ton in the non-conference, but that midweek's pretty stout.
No question. And those are, you know, those games count the same in the RPI as a weekend game.
Yeah.
You know, the RPI formula doesn't differentiate between playing East Carolina on Tuesday night or on a Friday. So, and get those guys at home, you got to like your chances. But that's you're right. That's an important point is those midweek games matter. It's one reason that Arkansas traditionally has had some trouble with the RPI because they're so geographically remote and they're not allowed to play a lot of the directional schools in their state. So, you know, they wind up having to play teams that are RPI drains on them. So I think having those kind of midweek games on your schedule is a big advantage.
Ole Miss goes to Arkansas in a back-to-back week at Arkansas and Missouri. Since you mentioned the Razorbacks, did you visit them in the fall? How are they just mentally after the way that thing goes last year? Because I have a hard time believing Dave Van Horn, he probably still is not going to bed without thinking about a pop-up in foul territory at this point.
Yeah, you got to figure that's going to haunt him for a while, but certainly, you know Dave Van Horn, he's hard-nosed and he's focused on the task at hand. I'm sure that he's been able to turn the page and get the players too as well, but boy, that was what a heartbreaking, gut-wrenching way to lose a national title. This team, you know, there's certainly have some uncertainty. Because they lost a lot of those key guys from that team. But you still have three preseason All-Americans, Casey Martin and Heston Kerstad are first-teamers for us. And you got Matt Croner in the back of the bullpen, who's one of the best closers probably in the country. Question for me is how the rotation shakes out. You know, can Isaiah Campbell be that Friday guy? He certainly has the stuff, but he's been up and down over the course of his career. You know, you got Kevin Copps going back from Tommy John. Can he be, you know, a legitimate weekend starter for you? What were they going to get out of a Patrick Wicklander, you know, high-profile freshman for them? You know, they're going to need some of those newcomers to step in and hit the ground running. I understand Jacob Kostyshok is actually in their rotation this weekend, which is a fascinating X-factor for him because that guy's got really good stuff from a tough slot with a lot of extension. And if he figures it out, that could really give them an answer that they need.
If the SEC has a tendency to get weird sometimes, if it's not Ole Miss or LSU, is Arkansas the best bet to kind of jump up in the West?
You know, I would say or Mississippi State.
Okay,
that's the one that you know, again, an Omaha team last year that has a decent amount back, and you've got what should be a really good rotation with Ethan Small and, you know, JT Gann and Keegan James, who had a very good summer, kind of took a step forward for them. Still have some nice veteran weapons in the bullpen. Spencer Price, Cole Gordon, those guys are still around. And, of course, you still have Jake Mangum. You know, somehow he's still there. I think Mangum and Roddy Jordan and Elijah McNamee is a chance to be a very good outfield. And, you know, for me, the biggest question mark would be probably in the infield for those guys, especially at shortstop. Is Jordan Westberg going to be that guy? You know, is he ready to be an everyday shortstop in the SEC? I guess he had a really good fall for him, so that's a key piece. And I like their team, though. I mean, I really do. I think for me, you know, those top four teams, Ole Miss, LSU, Mississippi State, Arkansas, they feel like they're a cut above everybody else in that division. Although A&M, heck, I mean, we haven't talked about those guys, but
yeah,
they got power arms like always and, just a lot of unproven faces in the lineup. So it's going to be a dogfight like always.
Yeah, I think Jake Mangum has about a 960 batting average career against Ole Miss. They'll be definitely ready for him to move on whenever that eligibility up. I think Ryan Olenek is probably the Ole Miss version of that, that everybody goes, hey, that guy's still there. But, yeah, he's still here and still swinging. So I like these early season chats to test you, because you always pass these things. Ole Miss gets the second half of the home and homes with Tulane and Long Beach here in a couple weeks. Regional and national programs that, you know, at least have a name to them. What can Ole Miss expect? Anything to either one of those clubs?
Well, they're both for us, you know, outside our Field of 64 projection, but certainly teams that it wouldn't shock you if they took that step forward and made a run to a regional. I mean, I think Tulane's kind of an interesting sleeper in the American. You know, they have some good power arms, some guys that haven't quite put it all together yet to this point in their career, but have the ability. You know, certainly I think Caleb Roper is a nice senior that I think could be a breakout candidate now. He's got good stuff at the top of that rotation. And, you know, Cody Hosey at third base, another player to watch. You know, they got some boppers there in the corner infields. You know, they got a Jensen in the outfield, can hit the ball in the park. So I think they actually have a chance to sneak up on some people a little bit. I think people don't really have Tulane on the radar because they've not been good the last couple of years. But I think they're more dangerous than Long Beach. I mean, Long Beach feels like there may be a little bit of a rebuilding mode for me. You do have a really good Friday guy with Zach Bayoun, who's won a lot of games for him. But I think that they just don't have as much firepower, certainly, as they did a couple of years ago when they were in that super regional. So offense is, in particular, is a major question mark for Long Beach.
This is probably going to sound crazy, and I probably am crazy for even asking this, but relative to some other SEC schools, does Ole Miss potentially have a little bit of an RPI problem if they don't kind of get crazy here, just with some of the teams they're playing down and then missing some of the SEC East powers?
I'd be surprised, you know, if it winds up being a problem. Just any team in the SEC, you know, that wins a lot of conference games like I expect them to, I think the RPI is going to take care of itself. And certainly, you know, they're not playing any slugs in the preseason either. I mean, like Long Beach and Tulane, I mean, you got to figure they could very easily be top 100 RPI teams. You know, I don't think they'll be worse than 150. Those games aren't gonna crush you. And, you know, Wright State's the team to beat. You know, and the Horizon, as usual, that's a quality series to open up with. So, you know, I think Wright State will win a lot of games, and that'll help the RPI. Actually, it's one of those kind of sneaky good RPI series against a mid-major that will probably win its league. You know, because opposing winning percentage is 50% of the RPI formula. So, you know, even if Wright State plays a softer schedule in conference, if they win 45 games, then it really helps you in the RPI. So, I'm not worried at all about the RPI, really, for Ole Miss. I think the schedule is a pretty good one.
Yeah, I was going there next. Wright State finished last season with an RPI of number 69. Frankly, their non-con's probably a little better this time. They go to that tournament in East Carolina. They got Ole Miss. They got Oklahoma State. Picked to win the Horizon. Yeah, like you said, I think fourth time in the last 5 years. A lot of sticks back, as I kind of look at them this morning, did a little quick look, actually reading your guys' Horizon report for the year. A lot of offense, but then I kind of look at this pitching staff, and I see where Barry Bellamy's throwing harder, up to 95 or something per your fall report or one of those things. A lot of bad stats from last year. When I look at him, I'm almost kind of intrigued for Friday, because I feel, well, live arm, right-handed guy. But then I see this, you know, 1.76 whip, 7 ERA, and over 300 batting average against from last season.
Yeah, it's certainly a guy that I would characterize as a breakout candidate. You know, he's made a big jump from last year. He was just kind of a midweek guy a year ago. And, you know, obviously they need him to be a lot better, and they expect him to be. But I think Daniel Cruiser, also the junior right-hander who I believe is going to pitch on Saturday, he's got good stuff too. He'll be kind of 88, 92 with a swing and miss curveball. So, you know, I don't think certainly Wright State is going to have the kind of depth that you'll see in the SEC. But they got some live arms in that bullpen too. A couple other guys that can run into the mid 90s with Jake Schran and Tyler Lanecki. So, you know, they're going to be competitive. There's no question about it. The coaching staff does a really good job finding diamonds in the rough out there.
Are the bats for real?
Peyton Burdick's for real. Yeah. That guy's a really, really good hitter, in particular. And I think Seth Gray's a nice player coming off a good summer in the Cape League. I think those two guys in particular are dangerous. You know, you got a fifth-year senior in Zach Weatherford, who can really run. You know, I think he's a top-of-the-scales runner. He could make a difference in the base pass. You know, test that Cooper Johnson arm strength a little bit. And maybe Zane Harris, another name to keep an eye on, a big old donkey of a left-handed hitter. I think he's 6'5", 260, something like that. He can put a charge to the ball too. So yeah, I like their lineup. I like their pitching. I mean, I think they're really a dangerous mid-major team that frankly could wind up as a four seed you don't want in your regional or even a three, because I think their RPI has been pretty good.
Kind of last thing, we didn't mention him to open up, but what kind of year are you expecting from Tyler Keenan? I looked at some of his stats relative to other freshmen at Ole Miss, and frankly, especially with the era we're in from a bat ball standpoint, some of the best under Mike Bianco. He got overshadowed a little bit by Casey Martin from an SEC West standpoint last year, but what are you kind of thinking for Keenan in year two?
Oh, I think he's awesome. I mean, you know, he's obviously a big boy that is you know, has power, and I think will continue to show more power as he matures. But I really like the mature plate approach that he's got for a young guy. And you know, for a guy his size, he plays a good third base. I don't think people appreciate how good of a defender he is over there too. So, yeah, I mean, for me, he's, you know, I remember where we had him on our third base power rankings. He might have been top 10 or so. I mean, he's very high on him. I think he's an emerging star.
Appreciate it, bud, and be safe headed to Arizona. We'll talk to you again.
All right, Chase. Always a pleasure.
My post-game columns and this podcast, also sponsored by Pinnacle Trust. Pinnacle Trust, based in Madison, Mississippi, represents clients in 24 states, has advisors in 3 states. It's founded in 1997. Pinnacle Trust provides detailed, specialized investment management, financial planning, retirement planning for individuals and businesses, and much more. At Pinnacle Trust, investing is treated like a commodity, and decisions are made using objective research and information, not emotions. So regardless of your level of wealth, Pinnacle Trust will sit down with you, listen to your goals, study your expenses, and put forth a comprehensive, detailed financial and retirement plan. Cookie-cutter financial planners put you in a box. Pinnacle Trust builds a box just for you. To learn more about Pinnacle Trust, go to pintrust.com. That's pinntrust.com. Mention you heard about Pinnacle Trust on the podcast. You'll get 10% off your first year's fee.
So, pretty packed show today. Hope everybody enjoyed Jeffrey and Aaron. We've had a lot of content up at rebelgrove.com. Your observations. Got video from last night as well, courtesy of one J.G. Tate. Bruce Pearl, Kermit Davis, Brian Tyree, maybe. Is that right, Neil? Something like that?
Yeah, it was those three. Yep.
Okay. Is that right? All right.
That is correct.
Also, if you missed any of the stuff earlier in the day, it's been a lot of stuff this week. It's been a lot of stuff. We'll be back with another podcast tomorrow. Ole Miss and Wright State kicks off the baseball season at 4 p.m. on Friday. Rain creeping in much more for even Friday. I thought Friday was safe, but now it does not appear so. At least as of 9:04 a.m., we're looking at 70-80% chances around tomorrow afternoon. So I might have one of those kicking it off in style with hours and hours and hours at the ballpark. And one of those deals where you better be glad Swayze drains well, because even with the rain situation, you run the risk of losing a game. And what I mean, I don't mean losing it. I mean not playing the game, because Wright State's on a travel curfew for Sunday. The game's at 12, because I'm assuming they've got a commercial flight to get back to Ohio later in the day. So just something to kind of keep an eye on as we move forward there.
Yeah, there's a lot of rain in the forecast really starting Friday for about a week.
If you say Tuesday looks bad too. Tuesday looks awful, actually, on an early forecast.
So I hate to break that to people, but
yeah,
it is what it is. You always do a terrible job early in the year with managing the weather.
Yeah, I know.
It's not your strong suit.
Not my strong suit.
Nope.
Glad I didn't go to meteorology school.
Would've yeah. Been a problem. That would have been a mess.
Yeah.
All right. We'll look back on that and say wasted.
Yeah. Thanks to everybody. Thanks to Preston Broom. Thanks to Jeffrey. Thanks to, all the Valentine's gods out there, and Cupid and everyone else. So appreciate it. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.